Matthew chapter 2. The bad king, the pseudo king, and the true king. It was in December 1903, after many failed attempts, Wilbur and Orville Wright were at last successful. They got their flying machine, that's what they called their plane, off the ground. They tossed a coin as to who would fly it, and Orville won the bet, or got the flip of the coin, and so he was the pilot. And if you want a bit of trivia, the wingspan of a 747 jumbo jet is longer than their actual flight, that first flight. But they actually did it. They succeeded. They defeated gravity and flew the first aeroplane. So thrilled that they sent a telegram. That's kind of an early form of email for those younger ones. They sent a telegram to their sister Catherine. And these were the words on the telegram. "We have actually flown 120 feet. We'll be home for Christmas." Well, she hurried down to the editor of the local newspaper and showed him the message. The editor read the message and said this: "How nice, the boys will be home for Christmas." That was it. No story published. The editor missed the entire point of one of the great moments of history. Man had flown. It would change the world forever. And he missed it. He missed it. And of course, how many people missed not just the event of history, but the event not just of a decade or a generation, but of the millennium, a world change. Here's another bit of useless information for you. In 1969, Neil Armstrong made that historic one step for mankind. He walked on the moon. He landed on that dusty, desolate surface of the moon. But inside his spacesuit pocket was a piece of muslin cloth from the flying machine of the Wright brothers. And he also took a little piece of wood from the very first aircraft. So that's just from the left propeller, if you're interested. Now, of course, man overcoming the laws of gravity is important. And actually going beyond the Earth's atmosphere, to go into space, to land on the moon, incredible. But I like what Apollo 15 astronaut James Irwin said. Of course, only 12 people have walked on the moon. He was number 8. And he was the first man to drive on the moon. And James Irwin, who drove the Lunar Rover spacecraft, some 238,000 miles from planet Earth, said these words: "The greatest moment in history was not when man walked on the moon, but when God walked on the earth." Not when man walked on the moon. He's experienced it, one of 12 people. But he said an even greater event, when God walked on the earth. James Irwin was raised in a Christian family but had rejected it all. But when he got on the moon and he saw the vastness of the universe and he saw planet Earth, and now you could just put your hand in front of your face and block it out, it made him realize how small and insignificant he was. And he came to faith in Jesus Christ on the moon, and he said those words. Now, Christmas wouldn't be Christmas without a nativity scene. And I've got the good, the bad, and the ugly ones for you to enjoy or to be disgusted at, okay? So it's only a little bit of humor, a little bit of fun. I hope you'll like it. But in a shop window is this nativity scene, and it's one made up of Hoovers, little Henrys, etc., etc. And for Colin's benefit, a description is you've got 6 Hoovers there of various sizes, all depicting the characters from the nativity. So it's a nice shop window display. Well, people go quackers at Christmas, and this is a duck nativity. A duck nativity. Again, you've got all the characters, but they are all ducks. So I know we have crackers at Christmas, but they've gone quackers, okay? How about this one? This is a balloon nativity. If you've got leftover balloons, don't throw them away. You can creatively create a nativity scene. Or this one. Talk about going to the dogs. Yeah. Mary looks a bit rough, doesn't she? But the others look quite happy there. So you've got a dog nativity there. How they got them all to stay still for that photograph, I do not know. But it's good to see the tea towels and the blankets back in fashion, isn't it? Or this one. This is a Coca-Cola nativity, and you can get a personalized Coke can, and they've done that there with the different names to the characters all around a little manger. Or a kind of a cupcake nativity, one you can actually consume. But I dread to think how many people have looked at it, breathed on it, or touched it beforehand, so be careful. And of course, there's a Jenga or a Scrabble type nativity. And I think this is my favorite, just because from a comic point of view, or a where is the world going point of view, this is a hipster nativity, So you come on your modern invention there. I love the fact that Joseph's taking a selfie with Mary in the crib. But hey, people will do what people will do. But actually, it earths it in reality. And one of the things we do with nativity, we make it like a fairy tale, when actually it was real events in a real situation. So the nativity. Now, when it comes to the Christmas nativity, most people in our world, or certainly in the UK, if it's not an overstatement, most people in the UK get their information about the Christmas story from a nativity scene, or from a Christmas card, or from a nativity play. They don't go to the Bible. Most people you encounter out of these four walls will know about Christmas from nativity scenes, from Christmas cards, and nativity plays. That's all. And I can guarantee that most people will be clueless when it comes to the biblical record. And so these events that we've read are discarded as just myth, tradition, fairy story, not history. Well, I hope as we look, we'll see that these were real events. The one difference, of course, is in every nativity scene, the wise men are next to the shepherds. And as we'll see from our passage today, that is one fact that did not happen. Did not happen. So every nativity scene, every Christmas card, and every nativity play is usually wrong, because we get our people in the wrong places. Well, let's divide the passage up, and I'm going to divide it under three headings. First of all, the wise men's questions, verse 1 and 2. The wise men's question. Verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." We have come to worship him. Well, what's the very first thing you notice in that verse? Well, it's obvious. The wise men, the Magi, or the kings, however you like to call them, they show up in Jerusalem after the birth of Jesus. They were not there in the stable. So that runs contrary to all those nativity scenes and those Christmas cards. The shepherds were there at the night Jesus was born in the stable. The wise men turn up at a house. How much later did they arrive? We're not told. Could have been a week, could have been a few months. Some scholars say a year. The general view is 2 years. 2 years. I'm not quite sure what they base it on. Well, probably on the fact that, one, they're in a house. So at some stage, they've purchased the property. That takes time. Secondly, Jesus is no longer called the baby, he's called a child. Twice, in verse 10 and 11, he's referred to as a child. So he's obviously grown up a little bit since the stable. And so most scholars would suggest maybe this happened 2 years after the shepherds came to the stable. And then thirdly, who were the wise men? Were they wise men? Were they Magi? Were they kings? Which is right? Well, all we know about them are from these verses. That's all the information we have about them. From the Greek word that's used into English, it's always translated as wise men or magi. So that would tell us straight away they were not kings. Wise men or magi. We get our word magician from the word magi. But these were not magicians as you think of them today, like Dynamo. They didn't have hidden tricks up their sleeves, and they weren't able to conjure up tricks for people to entertain them. The word magi in Bible times refers to those who were experts in philosophy, medicine, or natural science. Now, if I had a Chinese Bible here today, I haven't got one, but if I had a Chinese Bible and I read this passage, In the Chinese Bible, it doesn't call them magi. It calls them PhDs. The PhDs came to see Jesus. In other words, the educated, the intelligent, the scholars came to see Jesus. The PhDs, they were educated men, skilled in philosophy, science, and therefore regarded as wise. So the term wise men or magi are interchangeable. You can use either. And most scholars believe that if you want an example of a magi, read the book of Daniel. When Daniel was taken captive and forced to leave his country, taken to Babylon, he became a wise man in the palace of the king. And we're told they took him because he was clever, and then he studied for several years to learn the scriptures of his day. That's what a wise man was. We are told, though, that these individuals were experts when it came to the sky. Verse 2 says they studied the stars. So had they been alive today, they would have been maybe astronomers. Astronomers, not astrologers. You know the difference. Astrologers are those who study things like horoscopes and say that the stars affect people's lives. And people come up to you and say, are you a Leo? Are you a Cancer? Are you a Pisces? I always say I'm a test tube. So was it? Someone said, no, always say I'm Pyrex. And when they say why, say I was a test tube baby. That throws them, okay? So we don't follow star signs. The stars did not affect this baby. In fact, the very opposite. This baby affected the star. Astronomers they may have been, and that may give a hint to where they came from. We're told that they were not local to the area. Verse 2, they came from the east. At the time of Christ's birth and from the geographical position to Jerusalem, that would have meant Persia, Assyria, Babylonia, countries that today are called Iraq or Iran. They came from Iraq or Iran. And that is where astrology as we know it originated from. So that again just backs up the fact that they came from that part of the world, maybe Babylon or Iraq, the birthplace of astrology. And to head to Jerusalem was not difficult. They had to just follow one of the great trade routes, what we call the Royal Road or the Silk Road. I think it was Joanna Lumley, and it's probably still on ITV's catch-up bit, did a program on the Silk Road, about 8 episodes looking at the journey from one area to another. They could have traveled down the Silk Road and to Damascus and then on to Jerusalem via the King's Highway. And then the fourth thing we learn about these, they were Gentiles of the nations. That's what the word Gentile means, of the nations. They weren't Jewish. Now that is surprising. And it should jump out at you in Matthew's gospel. Because Matthew wrote his gospel primarily to Jewish readers. Not exclusively, that's why we're studying it. But the original audience was mainly Jewish. And he kicks off his gospel by talking about Gentiles coming to worship the baby. It's an in-your-face statement. And he concludes his book exactly the same way. How does the Gospel of Matthew finish? With the Great Commission. Go into all the world. Go to those Gentiles, those non-Jews, and share the good news. So it is a sandwich that starts and finishes with Gentiles, but it is thoroughly Jewish in its content. And again, the contrast here. It's again meant to jump out and strike you. The Gentiles have a difficult journey and have to follow a star to get to Jesus, but they find him. The Jews had the scriptures. They know it. They could quote it. They didn't have to say, we'll go and look it up. When Herod says, where's he to be born? They said straight away. They'd learnt it as children in Bethlehem. They had all the scriptures, all the knowledge, all the religion, and they failed to recognize Jesus. And there's a lesson there, isn't there? There is a danger there that many folks who have raised up in religion reject it. They fail to see Jesus. And many people on the outside come to a real faith. Don't be one of those who miss out. 5 miles from where the wise men were, there was a baby. They could have walked down the road in 40 minutes and found him. And they couldn't be bothered. And this is the so-called people of God. But from my experience, to our shame, often the Gentiles outperform us in their loyalty and their commitment to causes. Okay, so that's the first one, the wise men's question. Here's the second key point, the foolish man's reaction. That's Herod in the story, verses 3 to 8. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Who was King Herod? Herod the Great is one of the central figures, the baddie in the narrative, in the Christmas story. He got the job. He was allowed by Rome not only to rule in the area, but to take upon himself an important title. Herod called himself the King of the Jews. The King of the Jews. That was the title he owned. And Herod and his sons ruled in Judea before Christ was born and through the life of Jesus. And we encounter his relatives. Herod is a clan name. We encounter other Herods in the book of Acts at the time in Apostle Paul. So they were a wealthy, important, influential family. Herod is a strange mix of clever, efficient ruler and cynical tyrant. It's a strange combination. On the positive side, he did a lot for Judaism. On the positive side, he was a great builder. He built Herod's temple. He restored and rebuilt the beauty of that temple. Magnificent building. Well done, Herod. Pat on the back. That's positive. On the negative side, he was constantly fearful of conspiracies, people coming to take his throne. As a result, he executed his first wife, Marianne, suspecting she might be plotting against him. He murdered his mother-in-law for the same reason. His eldest son, he killed because he feared he might take his throne. And then just to add flavor to the mix, he killed two more of his sons who he thought might rival him for the throne. So he's a nasty bit of work. And Emperor Augustus quipped, "It is better to be Herod's pig than his son." It is better to be Herod's pig than his son. In other words, as a Jew, he won't eat pork, so the pigs will stay alive. But if you're one of his relatives, you could lose your life at any minute. And so there was a standard joke, better to be Herod's pig than his son. And if you want to know how mean Herod was, at the end of the life, he ordered his soldiers to round up all the leading figures of Jerusalem. He brought them together and he said, "The moment I die, you execute the lot of them." Because he said, "When I die, there'll be no weeping and wailing in Jerusalem. But the moment I die, you kill them, and Jerusalem will be full of weeping and wailing." That's how cruel Herod was. And as you'll see next week, to kill a few babies was not out of character for Herod. Nasty bit of business. But did you notice his reaction to the news of the Magi? Verse 3. When Herod heard the news, he was disturbed. He was shaken violently. It was Elvis Presley who had the hit, "All Shook Up." That's Herod. He was all shook up. And if you don't know who Elvis is, shame on you. Think of a washing machine on full spin. They rattle away, don't they? They shake up. That's Herod. He can't be calm. He's panic mode. He's all shook up, totally disturbed, as is Jerusalem. Because if Herod's not happy, the people of Jerusalem know they're going to be the ones who feel the repercussions. If Herod's happy, we're happy. If he's upset, prepare for danger. And what disturbed him? Where is he born to be king? It's that little word, born, that upset him. Herod had bribed his way to the position of king. He had no natural right. He was an Edomite. He wasn't even a Jew in its proper sense. He was there because he had paid the Romans for his position. But here's one from the line of David, who is born, who has a right to the throne. And Herod knows that, and he's terrified. And so are the people of Jerusalem. And then in verse 4 and 5, he gives an instruction to the scribes. One question, where is the child to be born? And straight away, they're able to quote Micah, who lived 700 years before these events, who had prophesied Bethlehem. Not just Bethlehem, if you read Micah's prediction. There were two Bethlehems. So which one? And Micah tells us, Bethlehem Ephratah, the small one, the insignificant one, the one everyone overlooks. That's where he's going to be born. And little children learnt that in Sabbath school before they were 6 years old. That's why they can instantly reply, Bethlehem. And once again, we have this strange contrast. The wise men knew, and they did something. They went and searched out the king. The scribes knew something, and they did nothing. That's why they are the foolish men in the story. Wise are people who know and put into practice. Foolish are people who know and ignore. Don't be a fool. And then we have this third question. The journeyman's adoration. The journeyman's adoration. Verses 9 to 12. You all know the rhyme, don't you? Twinkle, twinkle, little star. How I wonder what you are. Up above the world so high. Like a diamond in the sky. Well, it's nice poetry. If you want the scientific version, this is it. Scintillate, scintillate, global, vivific. Fain would I fathom thy nature specific. Loftily poised in the ether capacious. Strongly resembling a gen carbonaceous. Well, maybe science and poetry don't always mix. Science actually would suggest that these things didn't happen. You don't follow a star. It doesn't hover over a home. You don't get led from one place to another. So is this just poetry? Is it just a story? Or is it actually fact? Well, people have tried to explain the star. Alfred Eidersheim, in the Hebrew scholar, said if you study the stars, there is a conjunction of the planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and the constellation of Pisces. Well, that's what Eidersheim said, this constellation. Others have said, no, it was a supernova. Supernova is when a star burns out. It doesn't fade out, it burns out, and it's what's left of the star. Others have said, no, it was a comet in Earth's rotation. Others have said, it's a low-hanging luminous meteor. There are lots of explanations out there, and every Christmas on some of the cable channels, you'll get a whole program on the Star of Bethlehem. What was it? Well, it could be any of those and none of them. Look at what the text says, verse 2. We saw his star. That suggests it's a one-off. It's not a general star. His star in the east. And the Greek word for star simply means radiance, brilliance, or bright light. Radiance, brilliant, or bright light. So I don't want to rob you of the imagery of the Christmas story, but when I read that, I don't think it was an actual physical star. I think it was a light they followed. Maybe what the Bible called the Shekinah, the glory of God that led them. It came and it disappeared. It appeared in certain places and not others. So I know it takes away the imagery of kings following a star, but they weren't kings anyway, and I don't think it was a literal star. I think they followed the light, just as God guided his people in the desert with a cloud of pillar and a cloud of fire. This was a radiance, a light that led them when they needed it. The important bit is why they came, and verse 11 tells us. Well, verse 2 and verse 11. Verse 2, we saw its star when it arose, and we have come to worship him. And then verse 11, on coming to the house, they saw the child, they bowed down and worshipped him. Do you know, if I was one of those wise men, I think I might have been a bit disappointed. They'd been in Herod's palace, splendor, even nicer than Solomon's. The glory of this palace, wow, just look at it. You ever walk into a cathedral and go, wow. And then you come to the Gospel Hall or Duncan Road Church, you think, well, it's very basic, isn't it? Where's the stained glass? Where's the altar? Where's, you know, there's a contrast in the buildings. They've been in a palace and now they turn up at a council house. I think that's a bit of a disappointment, don't you? They left a king wearing a crown and they find a little boy with a wooden car or a little rattle in his hand. They left a king in fine robes and they find a little kid in basic clothes. They left a man sitting on a throne and they find a baby sitting on the floor or a little child. They left a tyrant who could give orders and kill out and wipe people, and they see a child who can just about speak and walk. To the outward eye, you'd kind of be disappointed, wouldn't you, from what you've seen to what you end up at? But these people weren't disappointed. They saw divinity in that child. Here is the Christ, the promised one. Here is God incarnate. And they bowed down and worshipped him. Two things to note. First of all, I don't know if you notice in Matthew's gospel, but whenever Jesus and Mary are mentioned, Jesus is always mentioned first. The child and his mother. We don't worship Mary, we worship Christ. He is the focal point of our worship. So Mary is second, godly woman, one of the perhaps the greatest women of the Bible and of history. But we don't worship Mary, we worship Jesus. And the second thing is they come with gifts. They come with gifts. And when you, in ancient days, came before a monarchy, you brought a gift. You brought a gift. Now, this afternoon, we're going to sing We Three Kings. And I avoid singing it often because I don't like to preach bad theology and I don't like to sing bad theology. And if they weren't kings, why should we sing about them? But actually, if you get over that one initial mistake, the rest of the carol is full of great theology. It unpacks these gifts theologically. It's a great carol. Gold pointing to his majesty. He's the king. Frankincense pointing to his deity, his God. And myrrh pointing to his humanity. He's destined to die. The three gifts: gold for a king, born a king on Bethlehem's plain. Gold I bring to crown him again. King forever, ceasing never, over us all to reign. That's a great unpacking of what gold was doing at the birth of Jesus. And again, from the very beginning, Matthew 2, verse 2. Where is he born King of the Jews? To the very end, when they put a sign on his cross, this is Jesus, King of the Jews. Matthew points out to us the kingship of Christ throughout his gospel. Frankincense for a priest. Frankincense and more to offer have I. Incense owns a deity nigh. Prayer and praising, voices raising, worshipping God on high. Frankincense was used in the temple. It was always associated with priests. And what is the job of a priest? It is to bring us in touch with God and to offer sacrifices. And then myrrh. Myrrh is mine, its bitter perfume. Breathes of life, of gathering gloom. Sorrow, sighing, bleeding, dying. Sealed in the stone-cold tomb. Again, they bring this perfume of myrrh. To a baby full of life, they bring an object of death. You remember in John's gospel, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus come for the body of Jesus. And what are they bringing with them? We're told they come with a mixture of myrrh and aloes. Myrrh for a dead body to embalm it. Here's a baby full of life and they bring myrrh. This baby is born to die. Born to die. So three great gifts for a unique baby. You know, just as we finish, let's give it a final application. Three things to remember from the story. Number one, if the wise men can find Jesus, so can you. If the wise men can find Jesus, so can you. Think of how many barriers they had to overcome to get to the baby. The cultural barrier, they were Gentiles, he was a Jew. The distance barrier, they were far away. The language barrier, they spoke one language, he spoke Aramaic. There was a hostile king, indifferent religious leaders, but they broke down every barrier to get to Jesus. Because those who seek him, find him. And if you seek him this morning, you can find him. But don't just look casually, you seek him with all your heart. So application number one, if the wise men can find Jesus, so can you. Application number two, if God can use a star to reach these magi, then he can use anything to reach anyone. God can use a star to reach these magi, he can use anything to reach anyone. One of the things I love about pulling people up on a stage, we do it all the time on camp, we ought to do it a bit more here, is to get people up and say, how did you become a Christian? And the variety of ways. I was in church and a preacher spoke. I was in my bedroom and it was quiet and my conscience spoke to me. I was reading the Bible. I was watching a Christian film. I was reading a book. It was somebody's testimony, looking at the life of someone. There are many, 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 many ways to Jesus. But the Bible says there's only one way to God. That's through Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. God can use a star. God can use a preacher. God can use many ways to bring you to Christ. But you only get to the Father through the Son. And then finally, if the wise men offered Jesus gifts fit for a king, so should we. If the wise men offer Jesus gifts fit for a king, so should we. What does he want? Well, Christina Rossetti, in her lovely poem, said, what can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Tell, what can I give him? I give him my heart. Well, it's nice poetry, but what does it mean? The Apostle Paul nailed it on the head in Romans 12, verse 1. He said, therefore, when you realize who Jesus is and what he's done, therefore, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy to you, offer your lives. Offer your bodies. See, the physical affects the spiritual. What we do with our bodies has a knock-on effect to us emotionally and spiritually. Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Hey, we give to God all that we have. Here am I, Lord, use me. Let me love you, let me serve you, let me follow you. That's the proper response. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for these wise men. We've read the story often. Help us to glean not just information, but may it challenge our hearts afresh this morning. So apply your word to each, to every heart, for we ask it in the name of Jesus. Amen.